Hi, Greg Perry, the Historic Preservationist. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 64. I'm going to do a talk about today about classic architecture in America. Kind of combinations thereof of Georgian, Federal, and even early Greek Revival styles. So, and all this occurring sometime around 1800 to 1825 across America. So during the first quarter of the last century, the United States started to settle in and define its space on the continent. The political and social changes shaping the fledgling republic were so dramatic that by the innovations in building styles seemed to mirror, by comparison actually. So just a few simple adjustments to the status quo. But yet the nation's growth in the 25-year span laid the building blocks for its own architectural identity. And as we said, roughly 1800 to 1825. So from, it could be the 1790s roughly to 1820, the highest building ambitions of Americans were expressed by the Federal style. A more delicate reworking of the earlier Georgian style, less ornate, sometimes quite austere. It combined with Greek and Roman classicalism and a decidedly American way. Thomas Jefferson's Roman variant was distinctive enough to be termed Jeffersonian classicalism about 1820. The Greek Revival style would begin its steady rise to the top. Finally, this period saw the first faint glimpse of the Gothic Revival, earlier called Gothic in England, although that nascent tendency would not come of age until about the 1840s. So a lot of building went on in these years, nation building as well as house building. The seat of government had been moved to Washington in 1798, requiring the construction of a whole new federal city. With Jefferson's 1803 Louisiana Purchase, the country doubled in geographical area. When the War of 1812 ended, it opened up huge areas that had previously been unsafe or unavailable, and a torrent of immigrants rushed into the old Northwest Territory and lands beyond the Mississippi. The swift westward movement of both people and goods was made possible by a series of infrastructural improvements, among them the National Road, a canal system, and a railroad. Mostly as a result of such developments, the country gained 7 additional states and a bevy of territories between 1803 and 1820. The new state and territorial governments needed public buildings to support their activities, as well as housing and workplaces for the citizens. All this change happened very quickly. Yet the first quarter of the 19th century still provided time to build substantial and elegant structures worthy of a proud nation. From about 1800 on, the United States was able to call on the talents of professionally trained architects, including Benjamin Henry Latrobe, an English immigrant often cited as the first American architect, and even Robert Mills, an American by birth. These designers were inspired by the same classical prototype English and European architects. But Latrobe and Mills were not mere copyists imitating their betters. Instead, they produced highly sophisticated, original buildings designed specifically for American uses. Latrobe, in particular, set the tone for new public and private buildings, urging the adaptation of Greek temple architecture as especially appropriate for democratic institutions. Thomas Jefferson preferred the domes and arches of classical Rome when designing his beloved Virginia University, the Virginia State Capitol, and his homes at Monticello and Poplar Forest. The period also saw the publication for the first American design books, Ashlar Benjamin's American Builder's Companion, and Owen Biddle's Young Carpenter's Assistant were the most influential of the day. But not surprisingly, the era is defined by imposing public buildings, particularly state houses and banks. La Trobe's 1799 design for the Bank of Pennsylvania pre-staged the enduring interest of Greek-inspired buildings held by many Americans. But, of course, most construction was just residential. But both Greek and Federal Revival buildings were marked by noticeably low-pitched roofs and broad building outlines. Houses of either style might range in height from 1 to 3 stories. In fact, the formerly humble one-story house became newly fashionable during this period. At the same time, 3-story row houses were built in increasing numbers, as were freestanding 3-story houses, especially throughout New England. Generally, house forms were straightforward rectangles or squares, usually with center hall, deep pile, or side hall double pile plans. Federal-style roofs were low-gabled and often hipped. Many were so low they even appeared flat. Cornices, too, were unobtrusive to the point of being barely visible. Very formal, classic designs of Roman inspiration were sometimes distinguished by handsome domes, and even Greek Revival roof lines were even lower than those of the Federal houses, often nearly flat, sometimes with parapets. Greek cornices were heavy, deep, and often ornamented with Greek keys, palmettes, or even metropes. So throughout the period, porches took on a whole new importance. Both porticos and small entrance porches were much more common than in the Georgian years. And with the advent of the Greek Revival style, full porticos with pediments and columns often covered the entire front of the house, and very occasionally the sides and even the rear. So even vernacular houses built during this period illustrate changing architectural taste by 1825. The featured, most typical of the earlier vernacular houses, high-pitched roof lines and saltbox shapes were pretty much gone. Also eliminated were their lack of order of premeditations, asymmetrical massing with haphazard additions, floor plans forming a warren of small, low-ceilinged rooms, and irregularly placed doors and windows with small glass panes. Instead, symmetrical center hall double-pile plans, or even, especially in townhouses, side hall double pile plans became much more common. So there was little innovation in building techniques during the first quarter of the 19th century. Even as architectural design evolved, heavy timber framing was still the standard construction method. Match wooden siding, which created a flat, seamless surface, emphasized the formality of the wall and took on new prominence. But brick was very common too. But faces were finer and smoother than in the Georgian era, with much thinner mortar joints. Effects such as Flemish bond patterns and glazed accents bricks were abandoned in favor of a calmer, smoother, more sophisticated, polished surface. Stone, especially ashlar cut, was a favorite of the time. Where stone was scarce, hard plaster stucco, scored imitate ashlar courses, was a new popular alternative emerging. Cast iron, which was less costly than wrought iron, was applied quite liberally to all types of exterior decoration and ornamentation, from porch and balcony railings to fences. An innovative comparison material called codastone was used for cast interior ornaments and occasionally in exterior features, which, as column capitals, especially weather-protected areas like porches. The defining qualities of the Federal style are symmetry and restraint. Wall surfaces were flat and shadowless, punctuated only by symmetrically placed windows. The severity of masonry walls was sometimes relieved by inset rectangular panels with classical ornament, garlands, swags, and even cartouches. Doorways were delicately emphasized with slim, graceful, attenuated columns of the Adamesque type. Double doors were generous in size, typically flanked by multi-paned side lights and surmounted by elliptical or arched fan lights. Windows, though not particularly large overall, had large glass panes separated by slender muttons set into equally narrow frames. 6/6 lights became the standard in this period, which also saw the introduction of floor-length windows. The three-part Palladian window, still in use, was much simpler then than it had been in the Georgian era. Triple windows, that is, Palladian windows without the center arch, also became quite popular. Rounded, curved windows and doors on the outside of the building often hinted to the existence of a mirror image curve on the inside wall. So as the Greek Revival style took hold, door and window trim and window sash became quite heavy, perhaps in a blunt reaction to the studied delicacy of the Adamesque ornament. Window heads and transoms were always rectangular at this point. So overshadowed by the brilliance of the revolution that preceded it and the agony of the war that would come later, we might be tempted to look on this quarter century as uneventful, but if we do, we would be very, very much mistaken architecturally. Greg Perry, the historic preservationist, signing out. Thanks for listening.